The first time he saw Alfred Hitchcock's 1958 classic Vertigo, Jack Sullivan says that the film's music blew him out of his chair. That cinematic experience definitely planted the seed for Sullivan's new book, Hitchcock's Music. Jack Sullivan talked to Anne Strainchamps about the important role that music played in the Master of Suspense's movies.
Music is almost like a preternatural force in Hitchcock's films. It kind of hovers over the action, influencing it for good or ill. It's certainly not background. It's certainly not supposed to be unobtrusive. In something like The Man Who Knew Too Much, the music is the occasion of an assassination, and then at the end of the film saves the heroine's life. A song saves a life in Rear Window. The music in Psycho, I think, is almost like a force of aggression. Almost every single Hitchcock film presents music either as something that is deeply psychological or as a force that actually changes the course of the plot. In The 39 Steps and The Lady Vanishes, for an example, the music is actually a secret code that allows the Allies to thwart the forces of fascism. So it can be a force in the actual storyline, or it can be a deeply psychological force. Hitchcock called it the psychological use of music, where music expresses the unspoken, which means that music can actually say things the characters can't say or don't even know.
So for a film director, Hitchcock had a very sophisticated understanding of music, but he had a collaborator in all of this. Some of his most memorable film scores were composed by a guy named Bernard Herrmann. What was their working relationship like?
Well, it went from ideal to very, very sour at the end, but for the most part, it was ideal. Both of them were so deeply simpatico that Hitchcock would actually invite Bernard Herrmann onto the set and consult with him even before scenes were shot, which is very unusual.
Now, who was Bernard Herrmann, and where did he come from? How did the two meet?
He was a composer, an American composer from Brooklyn. Unlike most of Hitchcock's composers were émigrés like himself. He was a symphonic composer and an opera composer as well as a film composer, and he wanted to be recognized as an important symphonic composer instead of a movie guy. But what happened was the scores for Vertigo and Psycho in particular became so iconic that ironically he became known mainly as a film composer, even though he does have important and very beautiful concert works. But people usually don't ever hear them.
So let's talk about a few of the classic Hitchcock-Herrmann collaborations. First of all, the 1958 film Vertigo, which a lot of people think is a really classic film score. What makes Vertigo so special?
Because it perfectly embodies what Vertigo is about, which is obsession. The minute Bernard Herrmann's main title begins, the Vertigo Prelude, it just grabs you by the throat, and it's this kind of circling, repetitive figure that really does sound like a very deep obsession, and it continues coursing through the film practically from beginning to end. It's the film that Hitchcock asked Herrmann for more music than he'd ever requested before, and it obviously meant something very deep to Herrmann because he wrote some of the most powerful music he'd ever written for any film. Hitchcock said in several instances, "We'll just have the camera and you," and there are long stretches of Vertigo that have no dialogue. All those wonderful scenes with Jimmy Stewart circling, looking for Madeline in his car, the so-called dressing scene at the end, where Hitchcock was able to return to what he called pure cinema, which is just image and sound without dialogue. And I think it's the one movie that's impossible to even imagine without its music.
Mm-hmm. There's a famous chord in it too, isn't there?
Well, people call it the Vertigo chord, and it really is, it does induce vertigo. And unfortunately, some people at the studio were terrified that people wouldn't know what Vertigo meant. And so they asked Livingston Evans, the team that did Que Sera Sera for Doris Day, for The Man Who Knew Too Much, to compose a song called Vertigo that would explain what Vertigo meant. And this was a really close call because that song almost got used in place of Herman's magnificent prelude, and it would be very depressing if they had done that. But fortunately, Hitchcock kicked it out at the last second.
Didn't some people think that the music was actually too intense, that it kind of set the audiences up to expect something that was much more horrific than the movie actually was?
Well, I write in the book that my theory is that one reason Vertigo was a flop, and it was a flop, and now it's an iconic masterpiece, was simply that 50s audiences weren't used to, well, first of all, they weren't used to seeing Jimmy Stewart have a nervous breakdown on camera and be put in the lunatic asylum. They weren't used to that, but they weren't used to something that began with such a riveting musical scenario that it raised that kind of expectations and then kind of deepened into a very subtle psychodrama that in some sections is actually quite slow. But I think that's right. I think the music really sets you up for something that now people are perfectly happy to go with, but in the 50s it didn't quite come off.
Now, another famous Hitchcock-Herman collaboration is the 1960 shocker Psycho. And one of the unusual things about that score is that Herman used only stringed instruments. Why did he decide that, do you know?
Well, I'd like to say that he was just brilliant enough to want to invert all the usual cliches about strings connoting romance and lushness. But part of it was just budgetary. Hitchcock shot that film with his black and white television crew for Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and it was a project he did completely in secret. Nobody even knew. I mean, Janet Leigh told me that nobody knew what the project was about at all. Sort of like the movie, that everybody has a deadly secret. So Herman couldn't afford a large orchestra. So that was part of the reason, but he called it black and white music for a black and white film, Herman did, and I think it really does come off that way.
Now, at first, according to your book, Psycho almost didn't happen, and it was Herman's music that really kind of saved the film.
Yes, it was an unusual story, and it just shows how important Hitchcock's music was. Hitchcock, after an initial burst of enthusiasm for Psycho, became gradually more depressed by the film. He thought there was something missing, something that was flat, something that just didn't come off at all. And he told Herman that he was thinking about cutting it up and just putting it onto Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And what happened was Herman told Hitchcock, go away for your Christmas vacation. When you come back, we'll talk about it again. Because Herman really thought this was a brilliant film, and that he was very shocked that Hitchcock even had the thought of doing this. So he composed the shower cue in secret against Hitchcock's wishes. Hitchcock wanted that scene to be silent. And so when Hitchcock came back, he sat him down and he played the version that was silent. And then he played the version with his music. And Hitchcock just looked at him and said, well, of course, my boy, that's what we'll do. And that really got him very animated again. And according to Joseph Stefano, who was the screenwriter for Psycho, Joe told me that he was watching the dailies as they came in, and he too thought the film was really not very good, that there was something lacking. And he said one day Hitchcock summoned him to a private screening with no one else there and played the version with the music because he wanted Joe to hear it, because Joe himself had been a composer before he was a screenwriter. And Joe told me the minute the music came on, he just fell out of his chair. And he
said, so did a lot of audience members later.
Right. And when they played it for the production people, they all fell out of their chairs. And then all of us, I remember being a little kid, I did as well.
Yeah, I remember not wanting to come out from under the chair.
Right. Exactly.
Well, that sort of foreshadows one of the last collaborations of Herman and Hitchcock on the sound design for The Birds, because that's a film that actually doesn't really have a traditional musical film score. It's got, what, electronic sound effects, bird music the whole way through?
Yeah. is just astonishing, isn't it? And here's a film so ahead of its time, like so many of Hitchcock's films, ostensibly has no music, and yet it has maybe the most original score, if we can call it that, of any Hitchcock film. It's all electronic, mingled with actual bird sounds. And one of the things Hitchcock loved about the birds was that he could plan every single sound just the way he storyboarded every image in advance. And in Hollywood, in the archives, I found Hitchcock's music notes for the birds, and it's a 9-page, very meticulous document that he wrote himself that describes every single sound in the film. And they're all scored with very loud, slightly loud, or subliminal bird sounds, and he describes what everyone sounds like, and you watch the film, and they really do sound that way.
So you mean he was really scoring those bird sounds the way you would music? I mean, he was paying attention to rhythm and pattern, texture, volume, all the dynamics.
Texture, all those, especially dynamics. And he loved the birds because he was such a control freak that he could really control that. You can't really control what a composer is going to do, but he could control every single sound because it was electronic.
So how many sounds went into that?
Well, if you watch the film carefully, you'll see that every single bird attack has a completely different timbre to it, from very low and brooding at the end when you have that mysterious, very beautiful non-closure ending, to very subtle whirrings, I think, during the sparrow attack, to these shrieking, terrifying, psycho-like noises when the crows attack. Everyone sounds different, and they're described as if they're music in Hitchcock's notes.
So Bernard Herrmann wasn't writing music for this film. What did he do? Did he have a role in the music?
Well, he liked to think that he was the composer because he was giving technical advice throughout the film. And The Birds was one of the, I think, background sort of ominous rumbles in the breakup between Hitchcock and Herrmann, because Herrmann didn't think he got enough credit for The Birds, and he went around telling people that he wrote the music, whereas Hitchcock really thought that he, Alfred Hitchcock, was the auteur for that film, as far as all the sounds were concerned.
Hmm.
They really had a clash of egos.
Eventually, the two of them stopped working together. What happened? Those two egos
That. John Williams, who was Hitchcock's last composer, told me that he thought it was like two matadors just butting up against each other. Very stubborn guys, both perfectionists, both very independent, and that worked very well for them for a long time. And then finally, it came to a head during Torn Curtain, which was a disaster in the making, which Hitchcock divined it would be from the very beginning, and he wanted Herrmann to do something that would help promote the movie. He was under pressure to produce something hip, something modern, and Herrmann turned in one of these bleak, modernistic, pounding scores for something like 11 flutes and 9 French horns. And it was not what Hitchcock wanted, and he fired him on the spot right after the Torn Curtain prelude was played by the orchestra, right in front of all his colleagues, and humiliated him in public, and that they never spoke to each other after that.
Is there a particular scene? I mean, I know you've watched hundreds, and so this is maybe not a kind question to ask you, but is there a particular scene from one of his movies that just really jumps out as, say, just a signature Hitchcockian musical moment?
Well, one of the ones that jumps out to me, and it just sounds like a small thing, but the schoolyard scene in The Birds, I mean, the only music you have are school children singing Rissledy Rossledy, this very kind of charmingly tedious and endless repetitive tune. And that's what Hitchcock called counterpoint, where the music does one thing and what's on the screen does something the opposite that sets up this amazing tension. That one jumps out at me as something that's very Hitchcockian and that only he would have conceived.
Jack Sullivan is the author of Hitchcock's Music. He spoke with Anne Strange Champs.